Welcome back. This week on the podcast, I talk with Chad Gangwer. Chad is an accomplished restaurateur. He has been in the restaurant industry and business almost his whole life. He won some incredible awards. He was at the top of the industry. He was a partner in a hospitality group. And in 2020, he decided to walk away from it. He wanted out of the limelight. His mental health wasn't in a good spot. He was abusing alcohol, and in a sense, he wanted a rebirth. He wanted something new. He wanted to create a new path for himself and his career and his family. And since then, he has created a business called Chad Cuterie, which is a custom charcuterie business, and it has taken off. Piggybacking off the success of Chad Cuterie, he is opening Grazeland, which will be a custom craft deli where he will also run his charcuterie business. And what I loved most about the conversation is through these challenging and hard times, he was able to focus on himself. He was able to work on his mental health. He was able to get out and be in nature. He was able to find sobriety. And all during this, he was creating this incredible business that now makes him, you know, extremely happy. And he has a new purpose in life. And we talked through all that. I really enjoyed having Chad on. If you do want to know more about his businesses and the opening of Grazeland, just go to the link in the show notes. I have his Instagram, so you can find all the information about what he has going on. But it's really exciting. I'm pumped because it's going to open later this spring, and I can't wait to try it out. And his charcuterie boards are incredible. They're amazing, and they're beautiful. Another incredible company out of Greenville is Rebel Rabbit. Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to socialize smarter. They are an alcohol-free seltzer. They are infused with cannabis, and they have two different levels. They have a wild hair, and they also have a mild hair. So it doesn't matter if you're a regular cannabis user or you've never used cannabis, they have a drink for you. And you could be looking for an alternative to alcohol. You could just be looking for a healthier way to socialize, which alcohol is so bad for you, and we all know this, but we grew up doing it, and it's just part of socializing. So if you're looking for a new social drink, or you're looking for an alternative to alcohol, Rebel Rabbit Seltzers would be the perfect option for you. Their link is in the show notes. Their website is drinkrebelrabbit.com. If you use promo code LIFE20, you'll get 20% off your order. Also, if you just go to the link in the show notes, that'll take you directly to the discount, and you'll get 20% off your order. Also, Pelham Medical Center. Pelham Medical Center is just 10 minutes outside of Greenville, South Carolina. So if you're in the upstate of South Carolina, it can be a regular stop for anything you need in the medical field, but also anywhere, if you're anywhere in the country and you're looking for a special procedure, or you happen to know somebody that has cancer, or you're moving through some of that stuff on your own, Pelham Medical Center could be the perfect fit for you. I fully believe they're one of the top medical centers, hospitals in the country. They have some incredible orthopedic specializations and awards. They're in the top 5% in customer and patient satisfactory. So they're really incredible. I think they need more awareness really in the country and really in the Southeast. So check out Pelham Medical Center. Their link is also in the show notes. And last but not least is my incredible partner, Spinx. Spinx has been around for 50 years, and they've been serving the communities they've been in for 50 years. It's incredible. I grew up knowing Spinx just as my convenience store, my gas station, where I'd stop in and get my treats, whatever it might be. But I didn't know what they do for the communities. They give back millions and millions and millions of dollars to the communities they are in. So all I ask is, if you see a Spinx and they're in your community, know they're supporting the communities they're in, so they'll be supporting your community. So stop in and just support your local Spinx. Get your gas there, get your treats, get whatever you might like. But they're an incredible company, and I'm very proud to have them as a sponsor. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Chad Gangwer. Chad, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm excited to welcome you in my home. And you mentioned your dad had a restaurant not too far from here. But first off, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. It's a beautiful morning.
It is. Finally, I feel like we're getting out of the winter months. I thought we were out of that a few weeks ago, but we've had a few cold days, but it's definitely going to be nice today. To start, I like to figure out, like, where my guests come from.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So talk to me about your childhood. I know your dad was in World War II. He was also in the restaurant business. What was life like for you as a child?
I was born in Belmead, right down the road from here, not far, and which was also about a half mile or about a mile or two from my dad's bar, the Cock and Bull. So I grew up in the industry. I grew up, my first memories, I'm standing on, the bar stools, on pool tables. I'm playing pool. I'm playing snooker. I'm foosball, pinball. I sit at my dad's bar. He'd fix me lunch or dinner. I spent my life from, birth to about six in the nightclub industry.
Were you the only sibling? Were you the only child?
I've got a lot. My mother was previously married and she had three children.
Okay.
Then my father, he had two daughters before they met. So it's kind of like a miniature Brady Bunch. And I was the only surprise from the marriage. My dad was 50 when I was born, which is why I'm in my 50s and I had a father in World War II. It's very rare.
Yep.
And my mother, she was 36. And they stayed together for about 10 years. And then when they parted, I inherited two more step-siblings to that. So, and I'm the youngest. So, all my brothers and sisters, I got a sister 20 years older than me, 10 years older than me, two more sisters right around 10 years older than me, and my half-brother, David, he's deceased. He passed in 2004, I believe.
Got it.
He had a painkiller addiction.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
Which is why I'm very against. I barely take Tylenol.
Yeah.
I have an addictive nature too, so I don't mess with that. But I was kind of like an only child with a lot of siblings because I was almost 7 years younger than all of them. So I kind of grew up on my own. Most of them were just, babysitters.
Yeah.
Parents were not around.
With your pops, I know I saw some posts about Father's Day and he got shot down in World War II, I believe. And there was a mini series made about him, but your dad, like as a father, what was he like? I'm sure he was probably stern in some ways, but also, extremely loving.
You would have never known he was in war. I've heard from a lot of people that generation kind of kept to themselves. He was very kind. I think he might have spanked me on the bottom one time when I was like four. I can actually remember that memory. That was the only time he ever spanked me. And I think it hurt my feelings and his feelings more than anything.
Yes,
very, very loving father. He had a very deep, loud voice when you needed to. If he called me home for dinner, I could hear him four blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
You just go out there and, and I ran.
Not for fear, as out of respect. With having those siblings and being the youngest, what schools did y'all attend? And, high schools, elementary schools here and around Greenville?
I went to Augusta Circle.
Nice.
Right over here until third grade. And then when my parents split, I got uprooted to Piedmont, South Carolina, and spent the rest of my childhood there. Wren Middle, Wren High School.
Yeah.
And then when I graduated, I got out of Piedmont.
I knew some good athletes back in my day that went to Wren. I know you're a big nature guy now.
Yeah.
You love hiking. I think you still do a lot of trail running. You've done trail running, I think, in your 20s as well. With you growing up, were you very active? Did you like sports? Like, what'd you get into?
I played a little bit of baseball, a little bit of soccer. My sports was kind of split up because of divorce. The weekends, I went to see my dad. So if I had a choice, I could go and hang out with my dad for the weekends, or I could join, sports.
Yep.
Whatever, what have you. And, it all revolves around the weekends. So that would have cut back on time with my father. So my father passed away when I was 14. And after that, I kind of lost interest in a lot of team sports. I kind of withdrew myself from
shareable
for a couple of years.
With running, was that like something you would always kind of lean on? Or when did you get into like more long distance trail running?
I didn't get into long distance trail running until my 40s. I always ran. I do, I did the Cooper River Bridge run. I usually ran like 3 to 5 miles. And once I got into Southern Culture, I've been Southern Culture when I was 42, and that's when I really got into the long distance running. It was kind of because of all the strain and the stress running a restaurant, it was a good release for me. I was running about 40 miles a week trail running.
I saw something where you did do some like running, I guess in your 20s, and maybe it just was like more casual running. But during those years, I heard you also like kind of got lost in the corporate world a little bit. Like, what were your first kind of careers, you know, early on in your adult life?
My first corporate job, I worked for the Hyatt Regency downtown. That was early 90s. That was when Greenville didn't extend past Coffee Street.
Yeah.
In fact, as a concierge there, I was told not to detour anyone from going past Coffee Street, especially Washington Street. After Washington Street, it kind of went down. But I was there right when they were discussing the opening of the Peace Center.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that brought apart, you know, brought about Sobeys, and then everything kind of just blew up after that. After that, I went, I worked for Blockhouse right over here.
Nice.
A couple of years. Got my feet wet in the restaurant industry and never got out. And then I worked for Arizona and Trevena Development for 16 years. And that was I went for them from restaurant one, and I left them when they were at restaurant 14.
Dang. Were you like going to host or like to manage and open the restaurants?
I was regional the last few years I was with them. I would travel to Atlanta, Columbia, and here. There was four steakhouses. They had started building up more on the Trevena side, and I was kind of the indentured last man standing in the steakhouse, so they had me oversee all the steakhouses.
Got it. My dad was in the restaurant industry for a long time. His first job, he was worked at Arthur's, which was a wine and food shop. And he did a similar thing. He would move from Charlotte to Columbia to Greenville to kind of open up their separate locations. And he stayed in there for close to 40 years. I remember those times back when like the Poinsett Hotel was condemned. I was probably back in those early 90 days that you talk about when you didn't really go past Coffee Street,
yeah,
Main Street.
When I worked at a Blockhouse, we would remove a couple of windows in Poinsett and climb up to the air raid siren.
Yeah. People, I tell people that now that, you know, are newer to Greenville, and they like can't even fathom like the Poinsett Hotel literally had holes in all the windows.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really bad. And even before the bridge downtown, like that was a car bridge. Mm-hmm. And once you cross over that car bridge, basically where Passerelle and Gianna are right now, I mean, it was a totally different world.
Yeah, you're on your own down there. Yeah, you would have so your, I guess the dads, the older parents kind of, they would do their own little vengeance walk. They kind of keep around, watch teenagers. I got shooed away as a teenager downtown by those groups a few times, and I wasn't doing any damage to my own.
Yeah, you're just messing around.
Yeah, I was with more than two people, so they saw us as kind of a gang hangout, so they would, you know, kind of shoo us off.
Sure. With the restaurant industry, I know, you know, if you kind of look yourself up and I see like, oh, you're part of Southern Culture Hospitality Group and y'all had a number of restaurants. But before that, I know you got into it early on, but when was your first like part ownership or part like leadership role in the restaurant industry where you felt like part of the group or part of the ownership?
When I was with the steakhouses, I was there. I had pretty high regard there. I was there almost day one. I was, you know, working side by side with the owner and the vice president. We had a really good working relationship. You know, on the ladder of things, if there were 300 employees there, you'd probably put me in the top five. So I had a lot of responsibility, and I had a lot of love for that place, and I put a lot of pride into my work there. So I felt like part of the company. Is when I started seeing the company kind of detour away from what I wanted to do. And I could see the writing on the wall of the steakhouses I was overseeing. They were underperforming.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where I knew there was no pulling them back out.
Yep.
So that's when I started thinking to myself, if I'm going to grow the company, I got to start my own, which is what started Southern Culture.
What was the first? So was Southern Culture first?
Yes.
What was the, what was that journey like? Opening a restaurant, finding a location, putting plans together.
We had, my old partner and I, we had looked at properties for about 4 years. And it was always, you know, we looked at a couple of places downtown. We actually looked at downtown Anderson. Any for sale sign, I stopped. I look in the windows and, you know, I dream mostly. And it actually got to the point, like the last 3 months, I was to the point where like, this is not going to happen. And a manifestation in my head and started kind of dissolving a little bit. And we went to a property where it was once Brioso's, where Southern Culture is now.
Yeah.
And we walked in, and I had a really good space. It looked great. It was a little fancier than I wanted it to be. At fireplaces, had big grand chandeliers. Because originally, Southern Culture was going to be more of a like a rockabilly diner bar, and something fun, kind of loud, almost something you see in Nashville. But when I came in and saw the, you know, the fireplaces and the chandeliers, I went home and rewrote the whole concept of Southern Culture and made it more what, well, I'm not sure what it is now, but what it was when we first opened up, which is kind of a, I'd say a fun, but a little more elegant meet and three is what we did with it. And we wanted live entertainment, so we built a stage out there. And beforehand, you know, we went in there, we were going up against another group. I can't tell you what group it was because I don't remember. There was actually a couple of them, but someone kind of beat us out. And then when we kind of came back to the owner of the property and said, you know, we can do this for $100,000. And the other people, we said, well, we can do this for $300,000.
Yeah.
So, of course, the owner was like, well, I'm going to call these guys back up because that's more what I'm comfortable with.
Definitely.
And we went in there. We went in there poor-boying it. We did everything our own selves. We, you know, we anything that had to be done in the kitchen, you know, I'm using graph paper for blueprints. I'm not using electrical engineers. Everything was already existing anyway. And we went and we drove to Charlotte. We drove to Atlanta. My used furniture and equipment, everything we could to fill it up. And I was still working for the steakhouse up to the last 2 weeks before we opened up Southern because I had to keep a paycheck.
Definitely.
And it was interesting because I kind of put myself above on the kitchen level that I was not prepared for. So I kind of had to
made it. Right?
Yeah. And my kitchen skills were not quite honed. I was a, you know, I was a regional regional kitchen guy from a company, but the company was not really chef driven.
Yeah,
it's a steakhouse, but it's like a lot of the places that you saw in the mid to late 90s. You had microwaves, everything was portioned, you portioned everything out, everything was portioned out. So it's high volume, turn and burn, nothing that creative.
Yeah.
Although, you know, the steakhouses had some really good food and they put a lot of charm into their food, but it was completely different when I go in my own kitchen. And, you know, the first thing I think, I was like, I got to buy 3 microwaves because that's what my old kitchen had. And so I bought them not thinking about it because I was, you know, I was just replicating what I had learned. And luckily, when I opened up, I started bringing in some good, talented sous chefs. And I kind of, you know, I played around acting like I knew what I was doing, but I was watching everyone out of the corner of my eyes, like, okay, oh, that's how you do that. Okay, I had no idea how to do that. You know, I was very green, even as the head chef there. I could write a great menu, but it's like writing a song. Yeah, can you write a song, but can you play the instruments? Can you sing a song? I couldn't do either one of those. I could write a good song, but I couldn't sing it yet. And it took a solid year and a half before I started, once I was left to my own and I could be creative, and then that's when I really started applying myself and doing the little things. That's why I'm a little different. A lot of people in the kitchen, I grew up differently in the kitchen.
If I say, what's your style in the kitchen?
I'm a protein guy because of the steakhouse.
Nice.
So I like using, I like big slabs of beef, 5 big rack ribs, you know, pork butts. You know, I like big, slow cooking beef, pork, and which is kind of weird because you know, I'm still kind of a protein guy, but what I do now, it's all kind of dainty, almost tweezer food in a box. But I didn't know most of the terminology. You know, I didn't even know, what clarified butter was for when I first got in there. And it's just the kind of things that, like I said, I had three or four guys that were sous-level chefs. They could run their own kitchens. And I got lucky with them.
Good help helps, man.
Yeah, and I learned a lot from them. I learned a lot of things I should have done, and I learned a lot of things that I watched them do that didn't work. I was like, okay, I'm definitely not going to do that.
What year did y'all open?
2012.
I remember my point of view of Southern Culture. And I had just moved back to Greenville in 2012 from Atlanta. I remember it being a very creative menu. Like you would go there and like kind of get a different creative type of Southern meal. And like the mimosas and all that good stuff too. That brings me to my point of sobriety. So when did you find sobriety and like how did you navigate that through the restaurant world?
I did not get sober until I left the restaurants. When I turned 50, it's almost like a little click in my head said, you know, when I hit 50, you're no longer counting the years up, you start counting the years down. You know, even though I'd do not expect to live to be 100. I don't really want to be 100 years old unless there's some good medical technology out there where I'm still doing what I'm doing now.
Sure.
But when I started, it's like a little switch in my head flipped that I needed to make some lifestyle changes, mm-hmm. when I called my my reckoning. And I didn't announce it. You know, I didn't talk about it. It was the restaurant. You know, I was in the restaurant business for about 30 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, you know, there's two different restaurant businesses. There's inside the restaurant while you're working. There's outside the restaurant where you're working. Both of them are just as stressful because the environment is very toxic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love everyone that I've ever met in the restaurant business. But we all hung out because we all have the same thing in common. We all like to sit at the bar. We all like to drink.
Yeah.
We all like to get drunk. And then we go in the next morning and all bitch about our hangovers together the next
sure.
Good bonding experience for a while.
It is the culture of restaurants.
Yeah. And I, you know, and then like everything else, you know, when I could do something, I do it all the way. Yeah, I'm a system guy. You get me in a system. You get it. I should have been in the military because I would have been great in the military because you point, tell me what I need to do. You tell me what hill to take over. I'm there. You don't have to explain it to me. I'm in there. Luckily, my dad kind of discouraged me from being in the military. His words were, the gang wars of blood enough for this country. Let's skip a couple of generations, mm-hmm. what he told me. Because his dad was in World War One. Actually, his dad and his grandfather both fought side by side in World War One.
Dang.
Yeah, so I've, a lot of generations of some good heroes, but my dad wasn't. He didn't tell me I shouldn't. He just said, you know, let's think about it. No, don't
you? Yeah, yeah, sure.
So, you know, I partied a lot. Partied more than someone my age should have. You know, you don't really grow up in a restaurant business. You're around a lot of younger folk, then you gotta be the alpha male, so you wanna be better than them in everything. You know, or you think you can drink 6 vodkas, I'll drink 8 vodkas.
Yeah.
I'll come in here tomorrow morning at 6 in the morning, still drunk, and I'll still nail out brunch. It's mm-hmm. ego.
Yeah.
And the toxicity of it. And it when I left the company because COVID just basically scrambled my brain.
Yeah.
I went 900 miles an hour for 30 years and stopped. And I didn't know how to reset. And it shut me down. And my partners and I were already having a little bit of a relationship issue. And after that, once I came back, I didn't really want to be in the restaurant. Every day I went to the restaurant, I was like, I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
Because I busted my rear end for 10 years in that company. We had 3 restaurants. And we were in restaurant business, even on a good year, you're barely making any money. So all it takes is just a couple of bad circumstances to really ruin your whole empire.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to build, was a whole restaurant empire. I wanted to be a restaurateur of the year. I wanted to, you know, beat the heck out of all their other restaurateurs here, not out of spite. Of competition. I want to be better than you.
Yeah, sure.
If I'm going to open up Southern Culture, I want to be the best restaurant at Greenville. We got second best. So I was striving to get first best. You know, yep. We always got best brunch. Way up at LTO, I want to be the best burger bar in Greenville.
Yeah.
At Habitat, I just want to be the best restaurant on that side of town.
Mm-hmm.
And when COVID hit, I was like, why am I doing this if one drone can shut me down like this?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I put 90 employees on furlough. We did. We put 90 employees on furlough. And once I stopped, it's kind of like, you know, you train for a marathon for 10 years and you stop running for 3 months and your body's like, then you realize as 10 years running marathons, your body's not built for that anymore.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I went through. And we had a big falling out and we kind of just shook hands and I said, you can have it. And so
when you made that decision, do you remember like what you were doing when you made that decision to say, I'm going to go in and shake the hand and say we're done? Or
we both made that decision. And I didn't want to make that decision. That decision was going to be made for me. We'd already burned enough bridges to where there was no turning back.
Mm-hmm.
But it was 6 months of sitting still. And basically everything that we tried to, you know, I was getting handcuffed by mandates. And, you know, no, everyone was afraid to go out to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't patient enough to see if it was going to work. I've done too much for this to be taken away from me. And I was just going through a lot of mental health issues. I was drinking a lot, but I didn't put the drinking as part of my mental health issues. It was just work, stress, work. So when I left the company, I left the company in late September, 2020. And I traveled. I went to Colorado for a little bit. I came back and I was just like,
yeah,
what do I do now?
When you sat down and say you get back from Colorado, what was that moment when you're like, mental health, drinking is affecting my mental health? Like, how'd you make that connection?
When I was approaching 50, it was another year. I was 49 when I left Southern. So it was a whole calendar year that I abused myself physically, mentally, drank a lot more, affected my marriage, affected my family. That was my big thing. It's like,
mm-hmm.
You got to make a choice. You got to continue playing with your best toy, your favorite toy, or you know, try to keep your family together.
Yeah.
And, you know, you say it out loud, and it sounds like, oh, then, well, obviously that's the answer. Well, when you're addicted, that addiction's there. That's not the easiest answer to me. Mm-hmm. So it took me a while to form that mental energy. And I picked January 1st of 2022.
Yeah,
I think. And I picked that January 1st just to have, because it's an easy number to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't tell anyone, you know, everyone's doing dry January. So I'm like, yeah, I'm doing dry January. I'm doing
it. Yeah.
But I didn't tell anyone. I was like, I'm doing dry year. I'm doing dry forever. But I didn't want to tell anyone because I tried it before. I did it twice before and failed after about 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I made it 26 days and then said, oh, that's good. I mean, at least you know you can stop if you wanted to. And that's a lie. And went right back.
Yeah.
So I did January and then I did February. And that's when I was like, hey, everyone, I'm 60-day sober. This is my journey. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And even then I was like, I don't know how long it's going to last, but I'm going to do it today.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done for 810 days now, is every day I'm not getting drunk tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Life's much better.
Man, it is. And, you know, and I'm very outspoken about sobriety, about, you know, changing your life, because, you know, I just wrote something about it just recently. It's like, you know, the first year I was a little disappointed. I was like, okay, I'm sober. And yet I feel better. I lost 25 pounds. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big person, but I was up to 190 pounds. I worked out constantly. I ran a lot to counterbalance the drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drinking 1,000 calories a day, so I'm burning 1,000 calories a day.
Sure.
I feel vain enough to want to, you know, maintain a good physique even after all the drinking. But I don't know where I went with that.
No, just like you wanting to be outspoken
about sobriety. I made it the first year. I was like, okay, I'm sober, but my brain is still, you know, foggy. I'm still struggling with some, you know, anxiety, emotional outbursts and everything. So the past year, I started, you know, kind of retraining my thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's easy to say, hey, I'm sober, I'm doing a better job. But in my brain's like, yeah, but you're still not being the best person you could be in the world. You know, you're still, you know, I became a completely different person in the restaurant business. I became very manipulative. If I had to tell someone something to get them to do something, I'll say whatever I need to say to get that done. If I needed a business transaction done, I did whatever it took. If I had to stab someone in the back, it's better than being poor. It's better than being broke.
Mm-hmm.
And that person took a while to dislodge. So the last year I've been working on character, personality, you know, anxiety issues, you know, mental, emotional outbursts, all that from relying on something else to control my attitude and my personality. So that's been my process this year, plus the sobriety, and, you know, it's head and shoulders much more present.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I started writing, my resolution. My new reckoning was I'm going to start writing, and that's what I've been doing for the past 4 months. And I would encourage anyone, if you have mental health issues, writing is one of the best things you can
mm-hmm.
do, because you do it enough. For me, I've probably written, I don't know, 15,000-20,000 words.
Yeah. Your blog is really good.
Well, thank you. instead of getting on social media and trolling people, my first 2 hours every morning is I write. Even if I don't know what I'm going to write, I just start writing. Some things I might post, other things like, okay, that was just word vomit for 2 hours. I'll just leave it to the side. But what, for me, the best part is if I'm having, you know, if I could feel like an emotional outburst coming or some kind of mental health anxiety or depression, I start thinking like I'm writing.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to myself in my head, like I'm narrating what's going on, which makes me address what I'm going through and also helps me, you know, put it down, so to speak.
It's like, I do, you know, so much believe in almost retraining your brain or your mind once you get sober? Because I do feel like a lot of people think, oh, I want to be sober and everything's going to change. Like everything's going to be better right away. And in some forms, maybe that's the case, but it's also like you got to retrain the way you think. You got to retrain the way you process energy, you know, retrain the way you process anger, all those different things in your brain that you used to just rely on. It could be pills, it could be a drug, it could be alcohol. And now you got to retrain how you deal with that sort of stuff. I mean, a lot of times I tell people, like, you got to face your fears. You got to face your problems, you know? There's no more running away from that sort of stuff.
Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to provide a healthier and smarter way to socialize and drink. Their alcohol-free, cannabis-infused seltzers are perfect for anybody just trying to kick back and relax after a hard day at work or on the golf course with your friends or hanging out at a party and you want to wake up and feel better the next day. Their seltzers are perfect for you. They are a great alternative to alcohol as well. Their website is drinkrebelrabbit.com. Use promo code LIFE20. You'll get 20% off your order. That link is in the show notes. But join the mission and start drinking and socializing smarter with Rebel Rabbit seltzers.
That's unique when you say, like, you start thinking about in your brain about how you're writing. It's almost like your thought process to yourself. So you can kind of like break down your reaction.
Yes, I was a lot more spontaneous with my expressions and my thoughts. And now that I started writing, it's a mental meditation. Even when I'm just thinking, I find myself, I'll wake up, I get up at, I'll use around 5 a.m. That's the time I get up. And by the time I'm like laying in bed, getting ready to get up, I'm already writing in my head. I'm narrating things that I'm going to write today. I'm already narrating, or I have a thought in my head, and instead of like taking it as a thought, I start breaking it down and I start writing out in my mind. So it helps me understand myself better. Now that I'm writing, I understand what I'm thinking more. I address things in my head before they get too big for me to deal with. And it's very therapeutic.
How do you use back to trail running as a therapeutic process for you?
Trail running, I love nature. I'm a full believer in vitamin D makes you happy.
Me too.
When COVID hit, there's everyone stay indoors, like that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. This is when you need the outdoors. I think vitamin D is, one of the best cure-alls for anything.
Sure.
So I've always been avid about the outdoors, but I didn't really get into the trail running. The trail running, I hiked, but I didn't get into like trail running until my 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to take a year off because of my Achilles. I hike a lot, but I haven't done quite as much trail running as I used to.
You tore your Achilles?
No, I had a calcium buildup behind my Achilles tendon, which is forcing my Achilles tendon to do this.
Damn.
So I can rotate my ankle. And when I went to the doctor, he said, if you won't get this shaved down, your Achilles is going to explode. And so I had that done, and it takes a little while to recover, but then my other foot started doing the same thing. So I didn't have health insurance. So I was like, I'm going to rehabilitate myself. I stopped running. I changed the shoes I wore. I haven't worn compression socks in over a year. That was a big issue. I think I was over abusing the compression socks because I was on my feet a lot. So I used them to kind of help recovery. And I think that's what caused it, honestly, because once I stopped wearing those, it went away.
Damn.
Yeah, so it's a thing they said, it probably won't go away on its own, went away on its own.
They probably wanted you to have surgery or something.
Yeah, I mean, he had a nice $26,000 on the first leg, so I'm sure they're excited to get that money again, and I didn't have it. So I kind of did my own thing. And I kind of use that as an example. My last blog I wrote, it was an example of why after a year of sobriety, I still needed rehabilitation, that alcohol doesn't fix everything.
Mm-hmm.
It just fixes your, just keeps you from drinking.
Yeah.
The same thing with my foot, but my left foot, when it was operated on, had scar tissue for 10 years. And if you just thumped me on the back of that foot, I'd fall down.
Hurt like hell.
Like the literal Achilles heel.
Yeah.
But when I changed everything on this foot did the same thing. It healed.
Damn.
I could actually full mobility. I don't have any swelling or anything. And it was like what I mentioned is like, yeah. So after that, I started focusing on how to make my ankle feel better even after the operation, because the operation did fix it. It just kept my Achilles from blowing up. It still hurt. So the same thing with sobriety. The next year, I focused on fixing my mental health. sobriety was there. You got it, maintain, and now let's focus on level two and brain better. Because you know, you all that alcohol, it destroys your functioning. It destroys your motor skills, everything. And that was my biggest thing is I noticed as I got older, my motor skills were failing.
Mm-hmm.
I need my motor skills. I mean, everybody does, but for work, I have to have little hands, little fingers. And it was a struggle for me for a while. I was actually concerned that I might have done some permanent motor damage to myself. So that's another reason why I was like, I gotta fuck the bottle.
Yeah, for sure. With so you leave the restaurant group.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, you know, it's a couple, I mean, I guess 8 months or so into COVID, not eight, maybe six or something months into COVID. When did you start making charcuterie boards?
I had took a month off after I left my company because I was hell bent on opening up another restaurant. I didn't have the finances to do it. I did get hit up by a few people. I was quite the free agent when I left Southern. I had a lot of people reach out to me, wanted me to team up with them to do something or take over something they already had to help them rebuild it. And luckily, my wife was like, let's wait a little while. Let's get you healed before, because I was burned out, and I don't know what I'd be like right now if I jumped into restaurant business. And I was just sitting on my phone, the bottle of vodka in my hand, and a friend of mine had eaten, had gotten a takeout charcuterie box in Charlotte, and I saw that, and I'm like, that's an interesting idea, because my first thing was like, whatever I do is going to be COVID-proof.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that, and I researched the company that did the charcuterie box, and they were actually in Charlotte, that's one of the top 10 companies that actually flourished during COVID. I was like, that's what I'm looking for. Maybe not necessarily the same thing, but that was in my head. And I was like, and I hated doing charcuterie. I'd do them for parties, and I've got old pictures and they're terrible. But when I made them, I'm like, these look really good.
Incredible.
And then I'm Instagram friends with Marcus Lattimore and his wife, Miranda. And they had moved to Seattle, and she'd posted, she was at a little restaurant. I forgot what it's called. I think it's called Crack. And they had just like salami and a brie cheese and a pizza box that they were serving with some honey and some mustard, some crackers. And I like that. I was like, that's more my style for charcuterie.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of combined that idea of the pizza box and the idea from the people in Charlotte to kind of do my own thing. And I do all my branding on my phone. Very organic, very cheap. I'd spend, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 for branding companies for Southern and LTO and all the, and we'd sit through these meetings and look at all these fonts and all these graphics. And I didn't want to go through that again. So I created Chadcuterie on my phone. And
your logo is nice.
Yeah. And did not really practice. I made a couple of big boards for some friends for Thanksgiving. And I told my wife, like, I want to do this. Let's just see for now if I need some Christmas money. I know we'll make some decent money. And did it that December, launched it. I hadn't practiced anything. I made five boxes, and I took pictures of them. I was like, I'm just going to do these boxes. And my first 2 weeks, I did 60 of them, and I was probably trained to do about 20 of them. So we were running 2 or 3 hours behind on box order pickups and deliveries, and I was almost like ready to cry. I wanted to quit. I'm like, this is dumb. I should have practiced. I should not have gotten back in the restaurant business. But we survived with the help of a lot of friends that came in and helped, you know, put boxes together and deliver for us. And at the end of the year, I was like, all right, I got to find something. And then I started getting phone calls and emails from people saying, hey, can you do a wedding table for us?
Mm-hmm.
And can you do 40 boxes for this elementary school teacher project? I was like, sure. I mean, I've got stuff for it. And then Sean and Lindsay from Birds Fly South said, hey, do you mind doing some charcuterie for us on the weekends? You can use our kitchen. And, you know, I walked in. The kitchen is smaller than this room. It's probably from this table over. It's got 3 compartments, two coolers,
dang,
sandwich cooler. It's tight. And I sat in that kitchen for 2 years just doing my thing. And unfortunately for them, you know, they just had a bad spill of bad luck with, you know, their restaurant,
sure.
Perch and Birds, and, you know, they had to close down.
I loved Perch, by the way.
Perch was a fantastic restaurant. And I wish they had done better. They had, they had great food. It was an interesting concept. It was unique.
Yeah.
Maybe a little too unique for Greenville. People were, I think, a little hesitant because they didn't understand some of the food. Although if you went in there and ate it, you would understand.
It's delicious.
You're not eating. Yeah. You're not eating weird animals. It's just, it's a European name.
Yeah, yeah.
If you go to IKEA, you can understand. It's just kind of the same thing, It's, but people don't get that. But when they closed, the meteor was very kind to let me scoot right back there behind them.
Nice.
The space. But in the back of my mind, it's like living with a roommate. It's like if I moved into your house and you're like, hey, man, use anything you want. Well, I can, but it's not my stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to eat your food. I don't want to drive your car. If I might wreck it. I'm just not comfortable with that. And I wasn't comfortable with that birds either, although I was there long enough where that kitchen felt like my kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Something broke. I just went and fixed it. I didn't tell them about it because I was the only person using it. But they didn't have air conditioning or heat in that kitchen. So the summer times, I'd have to move everything back to my house and sort of illegally do charcuterie there and just bring everything to the brewery. And November through December, I do a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
It's 80-hour weeks. And since it's only for 4 or 5 weeks, not a big deal, because I promised myself I'm not doing 60-hour work weeks anymore.
Mm-hmm.
For that 1 month, I'll do $50,000 in charcuterie in a kitchen smaller in this room. I've been told the meadery, which is 3 times the size of this room now. But I would use that as my savings account every year to, when I get to a certain amount, I'm going to open up my own place. And so after this holiday season, I already told my wife, like, we're going to find something. And I found a little spot, very small spot, a lot different what I'm used to being 5,000 square foot buildings with big kitchens. This place is 1,000 square feet. There's no kitchen, so I'm building everything inside.
Mm-hmm. How many seats do you want to have?
No seats.
No seats.
It's got to be counter service, curbside, no dining inside. I want a more kitchen space, be able to tackle more catering,
mm-hmm.
and get people in and out. Not a dining room person. After COVID, I was like, I'll never open a dining room again.
Yeah. My dad used to always say, like, catering is one of, like, the best ways to make your margin, to make your money in the restaurant industry.
It is.
With that idea, what kind of fears come along with it? What kind of fears?
I lost a lot of confidence after COVID. That was one of the reasons why I kind of got pushed out with my company, is that I didn't, I was very cocky. I won Best Chef in Greenville a couple of years, and I wore that like a crown. I won it every single year. And after COVID and the company kind of went to crap and we opened back up, I felt like the COVID took a big shot in the gut, and I didn't have that confidence anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And my creativity went away. My urge to want to work and build went away. And so when I went through my reckoning and my relaxation for about 3 years, I'm opening up now, but the difference is, I was always partnered with people. This is just me. It's all me. So, if you don't make rent check, it's going to have to come out of somewhere. I'm going to have to sell something in my house or what have you. So I don't think that's going to be an issue, because even what I'm doing now, it would cover the rent.
Sure.
Pay for now. But failures, burnout again,
mm-hmm.
staffing. I don't have staff.
I was about to say, what does your staff look like now?
Me. Just me.
And you want to keep it that way?
No, I'll have to get people to sign. During Christmas season, I'll employ a couple of my old employees from LTO. Some kitchen employees, very talented. They all work for Society downtown.
Oh, nice. That's a great spot, too.
Yeah. They have all of LTO's employees in that kitchen. I tell everyone, I said, that's why their food's good.
Yeah.
They've got a real good crew in there. And so I get them to fill in some holes for me during the busy times.
Mm-hmm.
And but this time, I'll probably have to employ. I plan on only being open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 6. Which means I can be there every day.
Got it.
And not hurt myself. And I can have one or two employees. If the volume increases, then I just bring on more people.
Engineered Sleep makes the best mattresses out there. Sleep is the number one thing you can focus on right now to better your performance on a daily basis, and you might as well be sleeping on an engineered sleep mattress. Like I said, their products are the best, and their customer service is second to none. Their website is engineeredsleep.com. If you use promo code LIVE15, you'll get 15% off your order. So if you or someone you know is looking for a new mattress, reach out to the team at Engineered Sleep, and they'll hook you up. Again, their website is engineeredsleep.com. Use promo code LIVE15 to get 15% off your order.
We kind of didn't talk about this, but the ramp up of charcuterie, your business with charcuterie boards. Like, I mean, I know you did kind of took off right away. Yeah. But since then, you mean you made thousands and thousands of boards and boxes. How cool has that been for you to see the growth?
It's really, it makes me smile because, you know, it's all, my wife has a big hand and she handles all the communication with emails. I do the social media, but she handles all the emails because apparently I'm not very good with my, and I'm just, we're texting with me. You can see I'm a man of few words. I'm texting like, okay, got it. See it. And so I'm the same way when I email. People are like, hey, how much is this box? I was like, $100. My wife's like, you can't do that. You're going to have to be more. You got to be more of a salesman. I'm like, I am not. I sell through my physical, what I do. That's my art is my sales, my sales pitch. So she handles all that. But it's really great to, when you put in 4 or 5 hours on this just ridiculously big table. And when you're doing it so many times, it just looks like pieces of squares and triangles and circles. I don't see it.
I saw you write that somewhere. It's like,
yeah, it's like high end arts and crafts for me. I don't see it as food anymore, but when I do a lot of it, so I get kind of burned out on it. But when I bring it just to people's reactions, and you know, that's the payoff for me is people are like, oh wow, this is amazing. And, you know, people are bringing out their phones, and photographers are. I've had photographers stop taking pictures of the bride and groom and stop walking to the table and start taking pictures of the table, and. And when, you know, I'll see when people are like, where can I get a charcuterie board, you know, online, and people are just, it's charcuterie. I was like, man, that's awesome. Because, see, when I do something, I want to be the best.
Yeah.
If anyone told me 5 years ago, you know, you're going to be the best person making charcuterie, I'd be like, you are full of.
You're crazy.
Yeah, I will not do one charcuterie board. It's amazing what desperation can turn you into.
But it is unique in a way that you can solely own it. You know what I mean? Like I feel like a charcuterie board, it is your piece of art.
Yeah.
It's nobody else's.
Yeah. I wanted to, you know, there's a lot of people who do charcuterie in Greenville. There's a couple of them that do a fantastic job that if I can't be in town or I can't do it, I'll say, hey, Southern Grazer in Simpsonville. She does a great job. Her boards look at least as good as mine. And yeah, I'm not going to tell someone, oh yeah, do her boards are at least as good. Maybe I'm not about like I said. But, yeah, you know, so I do my own pickles. So I make my own spreads. I make my own pimento cheese.
Where do you source a lot of your stuff from?
Boar's Head. I get all my meat and cheeses from Boar's Head. Boar's Head's gluten-free. It's dye-free. It's nitrate-free. It's the,
nice.
It's the healthiest you're going to get.
My wife will like that.
Yeah. Boar's Head is the healthy. And, you know, Boar's Head gets a bad rap because it's expensive. It's not nearly as expensive as you think it is. Grocery stores market up 300%. So if you're paying $14 a pound for turkey, I'm getting it for $4.50 a pound. So I don't charge the same overhead as the grocery stores do. But and they're a great company. They're head and shoulders above customer service. If I need something, if I just need one chub of pepperoni, we'll get it for you tomorrow.
Awesome.
So I have a good working relationship with them. And other than that, I did. You know, I get stack of bread from Swat Rabbit. If the produce isn't, I love Swat Rabbit, but it does not do me good to buy a bunch of carrots for $8.
Sure.
And when
me neither sometimes, but I love them.
I get organic carrots, rainbow from Whole Foods for $3 a pound.
Yeah.
Not $8 a pound. So, you know, I'm all for helping out local as much as I can, but same time, I've got a budget.
Yeah. I had Mary, the owner of Swamp Rabbit, on the podcast, and I mean, we absolutely love Swamp Rabbit. I'm there as much as I can. But yeah, sometimes just like my budget doesn't always fit to do all my grocery shopping there. With your vision of Grazeland, what other types of foods Do you feel people will be able to pick up, or like, will you be offering?
I'm going to open up more charcuterie a little more. Everything I'm doing right now is by appointment only. I don't do any, I do last minute orders. I'm not busy, but I'm going to have more grab and go charcuterie. I'll have some grab and go. I'll be using boar's head, so I'll have some grab and go meats and cheeses for nice people just to pick up. And it's going to be less than what you buy at any grocery store because my overhead is not the same. Mm-hmm. Some deli sandwiches, some salads. I was going to do a pimento cheese variation menu when I was at Burr's. I just didn't have the space for it. That's a lot of cheese grating to be done in a small room.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be doing some homemade pimento cheese. And I'll be doing unique twists. You know, if you go to Publix and you go to a Harris Teeter, you can get your crudité platters, your fruit platters. I'm going to be offering that too, but obviously on a higher aesthetic level.
Yeah. With when do you expect to open, and exactly where is the location?
I expect to open in June, which means I'll be open in July.
Right.
I'm going to be in a very unique location because I've just discovered before when I already signed the lease that I'm going to have some good neighbors with me, but I'm going to be on Antrim Drive.
Mm-hmm.
There you got that Kimbrell's building across the street. I'm right behind where Great Escape was for years.
Oh yeah.
Road. And my neighbor one is going to be, Como 864.
Oh, Dana. I love those people. I had her on too. She's awesome.
As she's opening up a second location, she's literally, her door is going to be right here.
Hell yeah.
She's going to be my neighbor. Radio Room is going to be right across the street. I have another, I think local business that's looking at opening up over there. So you're going to have four really good established local businesses all in the same street corner, which I think is going to be good for
Brooklyn. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Lawrence Road is really growing.
It is.
Some really good stuff.
Rabbits button up to it. So I think people were progressing towards that area. And I picked this spot, one for the size, two because it already had concrete floors and it had a good interior,
mm-hmm.
which saves me a lot of cash. But, you know, there's no hood. I'll have to do the plumbing in there to fit, you know, DHEC, but that's my biggest issue there, and that's not a big deal. So, you know, I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not grilling anything. I'm going to be toasting things. I'll have an oven in there for certain little varieties of things that I'll have to bake, but there's not going to be like, you know, you're not going to go there, you're not going to get a sandwich for french fries. You're
yeah.
going to get, you know, a hamburger, you know, cold cuts, cold sandwiches. Kind of like think of an artisanal Subway, even though I hate to use that word as a comparison, but similar to that.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense. And then some other remarkable items. I'll be making homemade spreads, sauces, and that type of thing that you can get.
Dang, it's going to be delicious.
Yes.
with your mental health, and I know earlier you mentioned like with your sobriety, it's kind of like a daily decision. You wake up and say, I'm going to be sober today. And I think that's a great way to do it because you don't put too much pressure on yourself to think, oh, I got to be sober for 40 more years or anything like that. is there anything else you do on a daily basis or groups or people, connections that you use to help support your sobriety?
I do it all on my own. I do post a lot on social media to hold myself accountable.
Sure. That's huge. Accountability.
Yes. Telling everyone this is what I'm going to do keeps me straight.
Mm-hmm.
And if I kept it to myself, I probably would have failed.
Yeah.
I do have a small group of folks that have been encouraged by what I do that are now sober.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep my phone lines open for them 24/7. And that also holds me accountable. I do a lot of meditation. I do a lot of reading now.
Yeah.
I put down the TV. I put down the social media more than I used to. And I travel a lot more, which that's going to go to crap for a little while on LA. But I was the last 3 years, I dedicate 10 weeks a year to traveling.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where's your favorite spot you've been in the last few years?
You know, I've been probably Sedona. I went to Sedona the first time. I went there to celebrate my 60 days of sobriety year before last. So I've been there a couple of times. Colorado is always my haven for outdoors. Mm-hmm.
I think you got a tattoo on your hand, I think, is
yeah, I got mountains. The One Life, yeah. And that's before I went sober. It's kind of, and this, actually, this guy.
Get high on the mountain. Oh, yeah.
And it's from this.
You got a, I saw another thing you had. Yeah, there you go.
It's keychain.
Yeah, I saw
a parking lot of Hillendale Apartments. I lived there when I was 21 years old. And it just felt good in my hand. So I picked it up and put it on my keychain, which means I've gone 30 years without losing my keys. And
that's impressive being an alcoholic.
Yeah, and it stuck with me, and I never knew. I got that tattoo probably 10 years ago, and at the time it just meant, you know, get a high on a mountain, go run up a mountain, get your high, your natural high, and it's meant a whole lot more after that. I've kind of absorbed it and kind of created my lifestyle around that.
100%. I'm a huge fan of nature. Like, quick insert of my story, I ended up having to go to rehab, and the only rehab I really agreed to go into was one that I was hiking.
Yeah,
we were up in Nashville. We spent like 40 days just hiking for very little education about addiction and sobriety and stuff, but really just being out in nature. And I credit a lot of my sobriety to that. With your vision of the future, do you see Graceland expanding? Do you have a dream of another restaurant? I mean,
no. You know, I don't know. You know, I'm always for how big can I get.
Yeah. I've noted. I mean, you're also, you got a competitive spirit in there.
Yeah, and that's what gets me in trouble. You know, when I open up the deli, I guarantee you I'm gonna be telling her what. But I better be the best deli in Greenville. I
sure
do this. And no, my ideal thing is to, I want to try to open up a sober sanctuary. That was what I was working on. I was with the restaurants, but we couldn't see eye to eye. And what I had in mind was huge.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted a freestanding building, and I wanted a community kitchen in there for people struggling to come in and help cook. We were going to cook for charity, and we're going to grow in gardens in the back and make our own food.
Nice.
And that was going to be, you know, and not, you know, no admission price, just come in and hang out. And you know, we'll have coffee, we'll have TV, we'll have a movie on, we'll have games, just a big community center for the restaurant industry. But, you know, I wouldn't, you know, if someone works at a gas station, I'm going to say, you can't come in here, you don't work in the restaurant industry. But
sure,
for everyone, that was my goal. And that's still my goal, not as lofty as I had before.
Beautiful goal.
If Graceland was 500 square feet bigger, I would have both of them inside. And I'm still going to try to have something, even if it's a little meeting table for, you know, sobriety meetings inside there, if I can find the space.
Very cool.
Back to my kitchen space to make sure I had that space.
Amazing. Well, Chad, I want to thank you for joining me and coming over.
I appreciate the invite.
Yeah, man, it's been a pleasure getting to know you and kind of getting to know your story a little bit more, and a lot of connections, I think, from my childhood to kind of what you've gone through in the restaurant industry and my pops. And but it's been a pleasure having you on. I can't wait for Graceland to open. And if anybody wants some charcuterie board, I think they know where to find you. But we'll have it linked in the show notes.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Thank you for listening. Give our partners some love by visiting their links in the show notes. Spink's Convenience Stores, you can find the location nearest you. Rebel Rabbit Seltzers, they're on a mission to socialize healthier and smarter, so join the mission. And Engineered Sleep, making the best mattresses in the game. You might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. For me, if you could give our show a 5-star rating on your listening platform, that'd be greatly appreciated. And thank you so much for listening.